Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways, exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Onan, you all right? I do hope that you are. Me, yeah, same old, same old. Right, it is Tuesday the 21st of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's just tick past 8 in the AM, which is summertime. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Great, we've got a guest later. So after I do the front pages and stuff, we'll go to that guest sooner rather than later. If we've got someone in, want to chat to him. So won't spend ages on the front pages this morning and minimal stuff on the websites, if at all. So, okay, with all that said, got to recognise you guys. The glorious band, chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. The very best among us. Pretty much the best people on earth. Pretty much. Tuning in live to the Beau Show, what more can you ask for? Breakfast with Beau, formerly. Formerly Breakfast with Beau. Colloquially, the Beau Show. There you go, look, it's on that mug there. You can buy these mugs. I don't want to really do a grift. I very rarely do a grift. I never say like and subscribe and hit the bell either, do I? I think I've said it once when someone in the Super Chat said to do it. But yeah, like and subscribe. Get that bell on, do that. On all my channels, on all the content I create, I never really say that. But yeah, LotusEaters.com. Or the podcast of the Lotus Eaters channel on YouTube. Like and subscribe to it. It's right there, right? If you're watching this, it's right there. Do it. If you don't mind. If it's all the same to you. Get that bell on. Join me every single morning. Weekday morning. All right, let's stop fannying about, shall we? Talk about what's in the news. What's the corporate legacy mainstream media banging on about this morning? What's that cabal of evil Fleet Street editors trying to tell you is or isn't important? What are they lying to you about by omission? Okay, we've got... It's a massive Starmer day. Wall-to-wall Starmer. So Queer Starlin from Wall-to-Wall. Starmer on collision course. What, with his own backbenchers to oust him, is that? And I didn't know I was fibbing. Again, Starmer. So just, I think all but one of the front pages is just Starmer. Because he went before, if you watched the Beau Show yesterday morning, I told you that Monday, he was going to go before the House of Commons, make a statement and answer a bunch of questions, which he duly did. I watched it. It's pretty boring. Ultimately, you knew what he was going to say. You knew the sorts of questions he was going to be asked and how he was going to avoid answering them properly. It played out as expected, or as I expected, basically. But today, that Sir Ollie Robbins, the head of the civil service at the FO, the Foreign Office. It's now called the FCDO, the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office. It was always just the FO, the Foreign Office. Just the Foreign Office. And then they changed it to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Like, okay, even that is a bit like, ugh, really? Really? You don't have to do that. Why are you doing that? It's just the Foreign Office. Now it's the Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office. That sounds so lame. The FCDO. Just the FO. I'll just call it the Foreign Office. I'm one of those people, aren't I? I like to call things by their old names. I still call Snickers a marathon. Harry, do you ever... You don't. Okay. Starburst. Come on. Come on, Starburst, as if. It's the Foreign Office. Okay, let's start then. I'll whip through the headlines and then we'll talk about it because they're all the same. So I'll whip through them all and then talk about it. First up then, The Guardian. The Guardian. Okay. Starmer on collision course with Robbins over Mandelson vetting. Sacked official to set out... Ollie Robbins. To set out his side of the story after PM's Commons claims. He absolutely threw him under the bus. Absolutely, repeatedly threw him and the Foreign Office under the bus. All right. The Daily Star. A sorry excuse. Dope. I'm going with Homer's dope. Big capital red letters. Dope. Can't care. I didn't know I was fibbing. A little speech bubble. It's so unserious, isn't it? The speech bubble. I'm Mandy. Don't hire me. It's crazy to put like a speech bubble like that anyway, really. And then you're going to fill it with a bit of text. You could write anything. I'm Mandy, don't hire me. Are the people at the Star actually retarded? Like, actually clinically retarded? I think they might be borderline, at the very least. Okay, the Times, the Venerable Times. PM forced Foreign Office to approve Mandelson job. That's all part of it. Did they know that he wanted it so badly they just had to do as they were told, basically? We had already announced it before the vetting was completed. So it is a fait accompli. Sack civil servant to accuse Starmer of pushing through appointment despite vetting concerns. Let's just get through them all and then I will talk about it. Oh, yeah. As I said, the Daily Telegraph. I know many MPs will find these facts to be incredible. Yeah, it is a bit astonishing. Astonishing and incredible were the words that get used a lot. I know Dean Doris is taking test. Dean Doris has been taking testosterone. It's everyone's fault but his. This blurb's not too bad on the Mail. Complete slop, the Mail. The Mail group, completely subversive. As bad as The Guardian or The Metro or anything like that. Just tries to pretend it's not. It's everyone's fault but his. Starmer finally admits he was wrong to appoint Mandelson. Yeah, of course. But still won't resign. Instead, he blamed civil service, accusing officials of deliberate cover-up on vetting. He did say that a number of times. There was a deliberate decision taken at the upper echelons of the FO to not tell him. Shouldn't you ask more? I did ask, you saying. I did. He should have asked more, though. There's that old thing, isn't there? If you don't ask me about secrets, I won't tell you any lies. That sort of thing. You just deliberately don't ask. You deliberately don't delve into something. So later down the line, you've got plausible deniability. You can say, oh, I genuinely didn't know. Put me on a lie detector test. I can say with honesty that I didn't know. Because you chose not to know. Okay. As PM's, quote, incredible, quote, story is jeered, Kemi skewers him for failing to take responsibility. He was able to bat aside most of it, basically, just by saying the same old thing. It's really annoying. By the end of it, people are asking him the same sorts of questions. And the Prime Minister stands up and does that thing where he comes to the dispatch box and he just gives the most minimal answer, like something like, I've already addressed that question, and then just sits back down again. Yes, I was wrong. It was my responsibility. And I've already answered that question, and then just sit back down again. The Independent. Proof you knew is Indy Independence front page, Badenoch tells PM. Starmer is asked why he claimed to be unaware Peter Mandelson had failed security checks, even though it was reported here at the Independent 7 months ago. That's the sort of question where he just wouldn't really properly answer it. Okay, he says, I should never have appointed him as ambassador and I'm sorry. Yeah, again, just saying I'm sorry is not good enough. Why did you? Does it get into politics? We'll talk about it all in a sec. Jeers from MPs as PM admits his explanation of events sounds incredible. Yeah, it does. Starmer, I know my story sounds incredible. Prime Minister accuses Foreign Office chief of, quote, unforgivable, quote, cover-up on Mandelson. PM tells, this is the last bit of blurb I'll do. PM tells Parliament that, quote, deliberate decision, quote, was taken on repeated occasions to tell him Peter Mandelson had failed security vetting during appointment as Washington ambassador. Senior civil servant Sir Ollie Robbins, sacked by Starmer for withholding key information, faces interrogation by MPs today. He might say that he was told to withhold information, or he's supposed to withhold the information. We'll see about that. Robbins is refusing to take blame and spent yesterday locked in negotiations with government over his exit terms and payout. Oh, that's important. Ollie Robbins is his pay that he's going to get for being sacked. Bruising Commons encounter for Starmer, who resists call to resign from Tory leader amid criticisms from his own benches. He denies misleading MPs and breaking the ministerial code. All right, you get it. Some of the other front pages, it's all just the same thing. They chose not to tell me. You chose not to question them enough, though, didn't you? You announced it before the vetting was completed, though, didn't you? The Express is a good paper, says, for once you're actually right, PM. It does beg a belief. Yeah, it beggars belief. The Metro, all right, you get it. So, the most salient questions, really, I think the main one is, for me, the main one is, why did Starmer want Mandelson to be the US ambassador at all? Just that. Why him? It should be someone that's been at the Foreign Office for their whole life and has been an ambassador to loads of other countries for 20, 30 years. What it should be. I've got a great book. I read a great book. Sir Christopher Mayer. He was the ambassador to the US during, just before and during the Iraq War, the 2003 Iraq War 2. When George W. was in the White House and Tony Blair was in number 10. He's got a great book. I think it's a really great book called DC Confidential. I've had it for many years and I've read it a couple of times and bits of it more than that. Because that really delves into exactly the relationship between Blair and Bush around 9/11 and the run up, ultimately the run up to the 2003 invasion. He was right at the heart of everything. So Christopher Mayer, classic. That's a classic example of someone who should be ambassador to the US. He was in the Foreign Office sort of straight from uni, more or less. Spent half his lifetime, or all of his adult life, all of his career, at the Foreign Office with little things here and there, like he was a press secretary for John Major or something at one point, you know. So in and around the very heart of government, and then as ambassador to some places, and right at the very, very end of his career, as almost like a thank you. He's already knighted, you know, that type of civil servant. Really, really, really senior civil servant who's already got a knighthood. And right at the end of his career, just before he's going to retire, you get to be, just as a cherry on top, get to be US ambassador. Right, that's normal. To just parachute in anyone else at all really is odd, really odd. And then on top of that it's Mandy, twice disgraced Mandy. Why that? All the rest is a little bit of window dressing. Oh, he said, she said, like Whitehall drama. Oh, Ollie Robbins didn't do something right. Oh, it was the Cabinet Office dude at the time, and he should have told me, and I didn't know. And now, why did you want Mandelson there at all? That's, for me, that's the key thing. Seems like he is. Caught in some sort of web of liars. I don't believe him. I mean, Lee Anderson stood up. Lee Anderson and just said, you're a liar. He said, this man couldn't lie straight in bed. It's quite funny. The speaker, Sir Lindsay, asked him to retract that and he said no. So Lindsay chucked him out. It's fair enough. Of Lee Anderson, I mean. It's fair enough. Seems like he's lying, doesn't it? It does look like he's lying about a couple of different elements of the story. Exactly why didn't you do XYZ? When you said you did XYZ, it's now shown to me that couldn't necessarily really have been the case. All that stuff. Still, why did you insist on Mandy? For me, that's the key thing here. And a few people stood up, like John McDonnell, who I despise. Anyone knows John McDonnell? He was like... Was he's been in and around the Labour Party for 40 years or whatever, but he's a proper commie, and I throw around the slur commie for people that are actually just leftists, really just socialists. But he really is a full-blown communist, John McDonnell. He was going to be Jeremy Corbyn's chancellor. If Jeremy Corbyn had won that election against Boris, old John McDonnell would have been the chancellor of the Exchequer. Anyway, so I hate his guts, but he stood up and he asked a salient question. One or two other Labour backbenchers hinted at or said the same thing, asked the same sort of thing. Basically, and I'll just paraphrase it, basically saying, when Starmer became the leader of the Labour Party, you know, quite a few years ago now, did he take over from Ed Miliband? Was Ed Miliband the last leader? Anyway, when Starmer became the leader in opposition years ago, the way these things work, right, you need a faction within the party to back you. Okay. Now, in order for Starmer to, you know, win any sort of leadership election, he would need the backing of a big section of the party. And for Starmer, that meant sort of the old New Labour cabal. People have been around for a long time, like Mandelson. Peter Mandelson was, well, until this thing, extremely, extremely powerful in the Labour Party, like a grandee, a big beast. You know, like a godfather in a way within the party, despite not being an MP himself. You know, there's some parallels with Michael Gove in the Conservative Party. Just a large group of people in the Labour Party, whether MPs or not, and a lot of them are, they're basically his protégés. What he says, what he thinks about policy, they just all now think. They just all now espouse. It all comes from Mandy, right? That's the way party politics often works. You've got a few big beasts. Mandy's one of them. But Starmer needed or courted the backing of Mandy's faction in order to win that leadership election. Right? And with that comes, you know, you have to do some favour if you should win the leadership and then win government at a general election. That comes with, you've got to return the favour, right? And that was put Morgan McSweeney in, because Morgan McSweeney was Mandelson, truly Mandelson's protege, right? So we'll back you, we'll make you leader and help you win a general election, but when you're in government, you give us some sweet jobs, yeah? And so that was that Morgan McSweeney gets a super, super, super powerful job, chief of staff at number 10, sort of right at the very, very, very heart of government. Like a Byzantine eunuch gatekeeper type person. You've got almost as much power as the leader themselves, almost. Extremely powerful, Morgan McSweeney, who is Mandy's creature. And Mandy himself, we've got to find a sweet job for Mandy himself. But that's why. I keep asking the question, why though? Why Mandy, of all people? It should go to a senior foreign office diplomat. Da, 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 da. Why? Well, that's why. That's why. Because they got him into the position he is. And now, there's probably more to it as well, isn't there? In fact, I'm sure there's much, much more to it than that. It's not just simply, I owe you one from a few years back. Probably a lot more to it than that, isn't there? People that controlled or ran Epstein and or ran Mandelson. You think Mandelson himself is the top of that tree? Doubt it. Highly doubt it. There'll be people above him. People that own yachts, that sort of level. People that own islands, that sort of level. People that give other people enough money to buy yachts and islands. So, okay, all right. There you go. That's everything that's happening with this at the moment. He, Starmer, survived. He's not going to resign. They asked for him to resign a bunch of times. He's just like, no, I'm not going to do that. He isn't legally obliged to or anything close to it, so he's probably not going to. As I said before, the big beasts. Look in that picture there. You've got Lammy and Reeves quite literally waiting in the wings. There's a number of others, aren't there? None of those want that job before the local elections. So I suspect he'll survive at least until the local elections. When Labour get trounced there, then we'll see what happens. I suspect things will start moving at that point behind the scenes. There'll be rumblings all around Westminster. We've got a Sir Keir to kick out. All right, well, we'll see what So Ollie Robbins says today in committee, he'll go before some sort of select committee of MPs to answer questions. And whether he'll say, we'll wonder what he'll say, whether he'll give us anything truly spicy, sort of truly new information, or whether he'll just fall back on procedure and say there was these certain procedures in place. And I also did nothing wrong. I also followed all the rules. It was a problem with the very nature of the procedure itself. I did everything I was told. I'm a good boy, and you know, perhaps I should have done XYZ, but it's not actually breaking the rules or against the law, and I'm sorry for that. An error of judgment on my part as well. And da, da, da. It might be that. He might just do that. Or he might tell us, I suspect he won't, but he might tell us something a bit more juicy. Like, I was told explicitly by someone at number 10 to just do this thing. It was a fait accompli. The government had already announced Mandelson as ambassador, and I was just told to keep my mouth shut at this point. All right, we'll see. All right, we had a poll this morning. Harry, can you bring up the poll, and we'll have a quick look what we said on the poll before we go to our guest. Okay. Our poll said, just straightforwardly, is Keir Starmer lying? You know, like, was it a case of, I just wasn't told something, and now I'm being honest with you about how I wasn't told something, and that's it, that's all there is to it. Or he's lied about the whole thing repeatedly from start to finish. Oh, crushing. A crushing win for the Ayres. 95% of you, just shy of 1,000 votes, just over 900 rather, 95% of you say yes, he's lying. 1% of you say no. Just 1. And 4% say maybe. Absolutely crushing. One of the most convincing polls we've had, actually. No one's really believing it, are they? That's another thing Lee Anderson said. So it's all very well and good, what you're saying here, but no one believes you. In fact, he wasn't the only one that stood up and said words to that effect. Yeah, okay, that's what you're saying. That's your story. No one believes it. You know, we haven't got like a recording of it, like in the Nixon tapes, where you can actually prove it's like you on your voice recording. We haven't got that, but still, no one believes you. All right, okay. Shall we go to our guest? Harry, give me a thumbs up if we're ready to do something like that. Okay, we've got a thumbs up. So, okay, we're going to go to my guest this morning. Hopefully it works. And this is somebody in Restore, the Restore movement, talking all about the local elections. We're going to talk all about the local elections and Restore. And some broader things. I'll ask him some broader things as well. So, okay, if he's here, could you bring him up? It is Lorcan Barker, better known as Angloid. How are you, sir? Can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good. It's coming through nice and clear. Great.
Nice one.
How are you this morning? You all right?
Yeah, I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, no, same old, you know. So before I start asking you some questions, just let people know who you are, because I think a fair few people might not know who you are, and like you're on TikTok and you've got a decent Twitter account and all that sort of thing. Let people know.
Yeah, well, I'm a 19-year-old, I guess, political commentator, really. I commentate on politics, immigration, current affairs in Britain, and sometimes geopolitics when Britain gets involved or nearly gets involved. So, yeah, I call myself a political commentator. I'm on TikTok and Instagram mostly, but I got on Twitter probably around half a year ago, and it's gone well so far. So yeah, just starting off, and yeah, just talking about politics. I'm a patriot, so yeah.
Patriot, and you're considering aiming high and voting low?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, right, good, cool. So part of the new breed, I was the future once.
Yeah.
I'm old as dirt now. It's you guys. It's people like Charlie and Harrison and you guys that are going to be the future, well, hopefully, with any luck, going to be the future going forward. And I'm talking 20, 30, 40 years from now. Like, you're 19. You could still be doing this stuff in 40 years' time. So, want to give you guys, want to give you particularly a little bit of airtime, because you've been on the ground in Great Yarmouth, haven't you?
That's correct, yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's been really good. They've got nine very good candidates, all local. We had about 100 canvassers, which is very impressive for a new political party. And going around, everyone knew Rupert Lowe. Most people, I'd say 50 to 60%, were in favour of him. So everything was good. Restore team, good morale. And yeah, it was brilliant, to be honest. It was my second time canvassing for a political party. I did it for Reform, but that was a while ago, and you didn't get great reception because it's still a new party. So yeah, it was brilliant.
Okay, so just to let people know then, Restore, because they're so new, I mean almost still brand new basically,
Yeah.
remarkable that they're polling anywhere near they are, near where they are, considering how new they are. It was not logistically possible, it's not realistic to have Restore stand in loads and loads and loads of the local elections that are happening in what, a couple of weeks. Rupert has taken a decision, and the team around Rupert have taken a decision that they are going to stand some people in Great Yarmouth, just Great Yarmouth, which is Rupert Lowe's constituency in Norfolk, to begin with. To see how, basically, see how that goes, and that is sort of physically, logistically possible. So, something of a litmus test or something like that. And as I understand it, Great Yarmouth Council, there's something like 39 wards. Tories have got, I can't remember the exact numbers, but something like Tories have got 19 seats, Labour have got 15 odd, and there's a handful of independents in there. So, Restore, you say it's nine that they're putting forward.
I believe so, yes, and I think they're polling very well for it, and they've got high hopes. But yeah, it's a smart thing to do. It would have been a waste of time and money to do a national local election campaign.
Yeah, it's just
So
not
it was just
possible.
smart to launch Great Yarmouth first. I think it was something around they had Great Yarmouth first registered as a political party, and you had to do it in a certain amount of time before the local elections. So I believe that's why. So it's under Great Yarmouth First, which is, I guess, a branch of the wider Restore Britain.
I think it's completely unfair where a few people, I see Matt Goodwin and a few other people, saying, "Oh, what an embarrassment it is that that Restore aren't standing, hundreds, even a few thousand candidates for councillors up and down the country." It's like, that was never, what a disingenuous criticism to have. That was never going to happen. It would be completely impossible, in fact. But so in Great Yarmouth, though, they are giving it a whirl, see how it
Oh,
goes. So.
absolutely.
So, what the thing I'm perhaps most interested in is exactly the sort of response you're getting IRL on the ground. What is it like actually speaking to people, and what feedback you're getting, good and bad? Tell us all about that in as much detail as you've got, really.
So obviously I'll go with the bad first. You always get the standard, oh, he's a racist. We knocked on one door. Well, I did. I was on my own, and they had a Palestine flag through the window. But I had to give
Oof.
them the letter from Rupert Lowe. So I'll give it a go. It'd be quite funny and just go the
Brave.
right racist thing. But no, the vast majority of people liked Rupert. There was a couple of people worried about splitting the vote, but they understood that the vote would be split on Reform's behalf. So yeah, just positive really. Like I said, around 60% of people who answered the doors were in favour of it. A lot of them maybes and still sceptical. Obviously, we gave them the letter, and they will look into it a bit more and why they should vote for Great Yarmouth first. But yeah, vast majority it was positive. Even if they weren't going to vote for Rupert Lowe, they said he was a good MP, and they just don't know about Great Yarmouth first much. And it's a new thing, and they're only like a month old. So, yeah, very positive for a new political party, I will say. And it's very white pilling to see it.
It's remarkable if you say it's sort of the majority of them, or 50 or 60%, as you estimated it. That's quite remarkable. I mean, I suppose for Great Yarmouth, of course, it's Mr. Lowe's actual constituency, so they're more likely to know or have at least heard of Restore and things there than perhaps anywhere else in the country. But did you have anyone who's really like Restore, Rupert? I don't know. I've never heard of him or that. Did you have that at all?
You would have got a couple, and they would have been ancient. They would have been very old, but
Right. Okay.
just not on social media. But this is why we do it. It's so we can get to the older people who aren't on social media as much. So even as much as putting a leaflet in, it will inform them. And if they think Rupert Lowe is doing a good job, in which most of them do, it's very positive. They all love Rupert Lowe, which is pretty rare for an MP. So yeah, it's just getting out to the older generations who aren't on social media as much as the others. But if they're on social media, they would have heard of Rupert Lowe. It's inevitable.
Right, yeah. Because I understand that he is liked personally in the constituency. And as you said there, as you mentioned there, it's nearly always the case that your MP, whoever they are, it becomes unpopular very, very quickly. But
Yeah.
So it's rare that you get an MP that is genuinely liked. It's not unheard of course. But Rupert Lowe does seem to be one of the ones. He does seem to take his responsibilities as a constituency MP and quite seriously, and sort of the looks after the interests of the people of Great Yarmouth. It should always be the case for every MP that they actually take an interest in where they're an MP for. But I think Rupert does do that. Is that the case? You
Yeah.
say most feedback you got was that they liked him one way or another.
Absolutely. It's just rare for an MP to even, first of all, be known by his constituents. Because even in my constituency, I talk to people my age or any age, and they just don't even know who our local MP is. And if they do know, it's just like, yeah, he doesn't really do anything. So it's just really rare for an MP to, one, be known, and two, be liked. So yeah, it's just rare to see, especially in the current political recent history we've seen. It's just unseen and unheard of.
Well, that leads me into another sort of broader question. It's basically the same question, but a lot more broad sweeps of the brush. Tell me about, because I haven't really got my finger on the pulse of Zoomers particularly. I'm sort of firmly in my mid-40s and sort of old before my time on top of that. So you tell me, you tell me, well, what you think the feeling is among your generation. Broadly speaking, about Restore and Rupert, like how popular you think he's. I mean, we're all in a bubble, aren't we, to some extent? It's very, very difficult not to be in some sort of echo chamber and bubble. Everyone across the entire spectrum of politics, it's difficult to not be in one to some extent. However, in your experience, what is the feeling in your generation about reform and Restore, Nigel and Rupert?
Yeah, so I'll just say the general consensus among younger people is anti-establishment. We're done of Labour, Conservative, and Lib Dem to a certain extent. And with people are either looking to, I guess, far left, Green, and further right parties, what would be considered far right to certain people, with Reform and Restore. So Restore capture the radical anti-establishment general consensus of young men, really. That's the specific age demographic, and obviously males. So yeah, that's who they're capturing, and it's going really well. TikTok, Instagram filled with edits that I think Restore need to do a bit more media so edits can be made. But yeah, there's been in the recent years, obviously post BLM and post COVID, a shift to more radical right-wing thoughts and more anti-establishment thoughts. And we're going to be seeing a lot of these young men who are disenfranchised with the political system and society as a whole, who will be getting behind Restore, who want something different, who see an older Britain from 60, 80, 100 years ago, and want it and somewhat feel familiar with it and feel like that's what they should be experiencing, but it's being took from them. So they are capturing the youth very well, and I think Reform has failed to do so. Obviously, they had Students for Reform, and it's been pretty bad from what I've heard. So yeah, I think Restore is doing a very good job already, and I think it'll carry on. People my age are all for it because yeah, more radical, and people just don't care. And this is what Rupert Lowe does very well. Rather than when he gets called racist, he goes, "No, I'm not racist. Look, all my immigrant candidates, like Nigel Farage did, believe 2 days ago." He says, "Look, I don't care," and that's what we need to do. Is we don't play in their game, and we just say we don't care, and that's what the attitude is among right wing. Gen Z's, really. So, yeah.
Right, yeah, I mean that's a key thing. Again, where we've got a generational gap. I mean, it's quite possible I'd be quite young, but I could literally be your father at this point,
Yeah.
right? And there's a generational gap where I grew up I was a kid in the 80s and a teenager through the 90s, and I was already an adult just about at the turn of the century. And so I grew up in a pre 9/11 world. I grew up in a pre Tony Blair world, even a world without mobile phones and the internet, really, whole different thing. And I didn't grow up with that thing of I've been dispossessed. I've had my heritage and my birthright stolen from me. I mean, it's the same now. I've got it now, like everyone else. I'm in the same boat with you now. But I didn't grow up with that. That wasn't my formative years. Whereas for you guys, it is. And I feel like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like that isn't being taken into account by the vast majority of the establishment and political parties and the corporate mainstream. The amount of anger and resentment, rightfully, righteous anger and resentment from you guys, that what you're having stolen out from under your nose in real time, and that finally Rupert and Restorer, they will address it at least, at the very least. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main one is that it's become unavoidable, especially demographic-wise. And things like reversing mass legal immigration is things we need. Look, I don't want to be a minority in my closest city, which is Birmingham. My father is from London. He didn't want to bring me up there. My mother is from Alum Rock originally. Her great-grandfather lived there and her grandfather lived
Where's
there.
Where's that? Sorry, just out of interest.
It's in Birmingham. It was place 2 summers ago where it had no whites allowed spray painted.
Oh,
about
right,
99% Muslim. And my great-grandfather, my mother's grandfather, lived there and obviously had to move out eventually, obviously white flight and stuff like that. So yeah, it's become unavoidable. Maybe 30 years ago you had a certain foreigners, maybe more integrated, and you were still the vast majority. And now the demographic shift since 1997 has become unavoidable, to a point where I was on the tube the other day and everyone sitting down seemed to be like an African male and everyone standing up was women, which is just, it's just crazy. Because obviously with a demographic shift will be a cultural shift. It's inevitable. You're never really going to get assimilation or integration, whatever that even looks like. So yeah, it's people want radical change. And in a time where it's, I guess, radical measures, you need radical change to get yourself out of it. And people aren't just looking at moderate conservatism, because it just wouldn't get us anywhere. We need radical change and we need it ASAP. And if we don't get it in the foreseeable future, then I don't think we will have a nation in the next 40 odd years.
Are you saying demographics are destiny? Are you suggesting such a thing?
Yes.
Rupert, the idea that millions must go. Millions.
Yes.
That we need to put thousands on planes a week and send them back, even against their will sometimes, that they came here against our will, forced on us by an insane traitorous elite, and that many of them can go back against their will then, if that's the case, because we do exist, we are here, the native people of these islands are here, we shan't just disappear, we don't want to become a hated and marginalised minority in our one and only ancestral homeland. So that feeling for you amongst your generation, certainly amongst the people you rub shoulders with, that feeling's actually quite strong.
Yeah, it's a bit of a sense of urgency as well. It's because when we become a minority, we're not going to be treated like other minorities. We will be somewhat persecuted. We won't have indigenous rights like the Native Americans or like the Aboriginals. These people kind of have an ancestral beef with us in a way. They hate the empire, and our ancestors were the empire. Our ancestors conquered their ancestors. Our ancestors brought civilization, which I don't believe they like anyway. So, yeah, there is a sort of ancestral or inherent hatred among foreigners against the British for a lot of cases. So we don't want to become a minority. We don't want to become even weaker as a people. This is our one and only ancestral homeland. Our ancestors built it. They defended it. And they created it, and they are buried in this very soil, and we have a right not to be replaced in our own ancestral homeland. And I think that's the main thing. Again, if we live in a so-called democracy, and we never voted for mass immigration, yet we still got it, well, then we have the democratic right to reverse it if we never voted for it, if we live in a democracy. So it's very important that we reverse that was unconsensually happened against the British people, and get our country back.
You think it's a type of revenge, an intergenerational revenge? Often you get when people that are open border type people, globalist type people, pro-immigration people, more safe and legal routes, despite the catastrophe which is unfolding, the nightmare which is unfolding before our very eyes. Those people sometimes, very often in fact, reveal themselves one way or another to say, this is what you get. You went around the world colonizing. This is now what you get. So it's revenge for something our ancestors did.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also a sense of self-hatred among certain people, my generation as well. Obviously, when you've been brought up in the education system and you've been consuming this mainstream media or media as a whole, you've kind of been taken in this narrative of your ancestors are evil. They did slavery. They did this. They did that. And it's kind of created among, obviously, people who are a bit gullible and a bit maybe lack testosterone, and especially women. It's kind of self-hatred. They hate their ancestors. They hate the empire. They hate their history. A lot of them, it's just a lack of understanding of history. They think slavery is unique to white people. They believe colonialism's empires unique to white people and Western European people. So it's breeded this self-hatred and a... and a kind of like a suicide mentality where they're bringing in all these people. They're advocating for mass immigration. And sadly, it will be they will be the ones that will have it backfired on them, because they're probably the ones that can't defend themselves on the same level as men. So, it's a mix of both. Obviously, we have a lot of foreigners within power now, and obviously self-hating white liberals.
Yeah. Mad. Turkey's voting for Christmas. Absolutely mad. So going forward then, what's your view on what's going to happen in Great Yarmouth? Are you going back there to do more canvassing? How deeply involved in it? Is there other people in and around the scene? Did I see Callum Barker,
Callum
the Lion of Epping, was there as well? Any relation? Actually, is there any relation to you? You've got the same surname.
No, but I'm sure Hope Not Hate will make a little article speculate, because we're similar height as well, so they'll speculate whether we're related.
Haven't arrived until Hope Not Hate have recognised your existence, so where it's a badge of honour if and when that happens.
I've been mentioned three times.
Oh, have you?
Like, Angloid wants to deport everyone from the UK, so I was like, it's quite nice actually.
Yeah, no, badge of honour stuff, yeah.
Absolutely.
So on the ground, just going forward then, what else can you tell us about what it's looking like there? Is there any real polling about it? I mean, are those nine candidates likely to win? What do you think is going to, on like the 8th of May or whenever, the day after the elections, what do you think is going to look like? What are we going to be able to say at that point?
Well, first of all, we did gather data. I think everyone who went in there in certain wards, we all gathered data, and very positive again. So most areas looking very positive. Everyone's got a good mindset. I think we're looking at maybe a landslide victory here. So look, we can only wait and see. But I think there's two main more action days. I think that's the 2nd of May and the day of voting, which is the 7th, I believe. I think that is. And the other day was postal votes, so that's why it was quite big. So I'm going back on the 2nd and probably the 7th as well. So hopefully see a good victory. It'll be good. But it's looking very good, I'd say that on the ground. It's looking very good. Everyone says the online right. Well, the online right has got so big that it's just become... in real life as well, and people getting more comfortable with saying their political views and being face out like myself. And it's, again, it comes down to, we don't really care anymore. If we don't stand up now, then we don't really have much time left.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really want my country to be destroyed and annihilated in various ways, the demographics, because of the fear of one word, racism.
Racism. And again, I don't care.
The fear of that. The fear that some bleeding heart liberal, some socialist, some weirdo green might call you a racist. Therefore, you can't have a country anymore, and you just have to accept the slow burn destruction of it before your very eyes. No, I don't think so. No. Now, you can call me a racist if you want. And in your paradigm, maybe I am, but don't care anymore. That's what Rupert has said a number of times, hasn't he, on Twitter, when someone or other will call him racist, just quite literally and exactly just say, I don't care.
Yeah,
you know,
literally.
Next thing. So you think that's something that should and needs to be, we need to galvanise around that very concept. Stop being terrified that someone might call you a racist.
Just stop being pussies and remember who you are and who you descend from. Look, we wouldn't be here alive if our ancestors were scared to be called names. And we've just got to embody the spirit of the English, which we've forgot in recent years.
We owe it to our ancestors and our progeny to stand up and do what's right and vote for a party that's actually nativist and patriotic.
Yeah, if we don't stand up now, our descendants... we might not actually have descendants, and that's the whole point. And if we do have descendants, they'll be born into a society where, first of all, they're persecuted and they're a minority, and they look at shame, or they're taught in a system that their ancestors are evil, and it will just breed another wave of apologetic weak men, which we can't really do with. And I actually want the best for my descendants and the children I will have soon, hopefully.
Great.
Somewhat soon.
Great. So, like the opposite of what Richard Tice said a few months ago. Do you remember that when he said,
"Yeah,
asked him about
I won't
the future."
I won't be alive.
Who cares? Like that mindset, that way of thinking, is disastrous, morally and ethically disgusting, obviously, but also disastrous. Leads very, very quickly to a catastrophe. That must be abandoned.
Absolutely. That's just the kind of consensus we've had from politicians in the last 30 odd years. It's career politicians. It's all about themselves. It's all about their personal game. They don't actually care about this country. They're not patriotic. They're not nationalistic. They don't care about their descendants. I don't even know if Richard Tice has kids, to be honest. But yeah, it's again, just a selfish way of looking at life and an unfulfilling way of looking at life. Maybe that's a lack of... pride of the country, is a lack of caring, and maybe a lack of religion as well. And yeah, again, very individualistic to think. I think we need to acknowledge that we're all part of a collective, and we should strive to be a part of something bigger than ourselves.
Great. So you would reject sort of the more extreme version of individualism, even like Tucker Carlson. I quite like Tucker Carlson. I think he's pretty good. I don't agree with everything he ever said. Like, some of his takes I profoundly disagree with, but a lot of it I really like. I really think he's good. But one of the things he does say, which I don't agree with, is about individualism.
Yeah.
As you say, we are part of a collective. We are part of a group. To have an in-group preference isn't insane and wrong-headed and evil. Everyone else is allowed an in-group preference, apart from us, it seems, apart from Anglos. And that even Tucker Carlson would sometimes talk about how, you know, if you have anything other than just staunch 100% individualism, that immediately, almost immediately leads to something dark and horrible and the Germans of the 1930s or something. No, I don't necessarily think so at all. We are individuals and something bigger than that, belong to a collective.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of it. And that's kind of the, idea that we've had for all of history, really. When you're fighting, say, back 1,000 years in a shield war, and you're willing to die, you know that your country will live on, and hopefully the person behind you will. So yeah, it's a beautiful mindset, and it's how a nation should view the world, is that, look, we have a nation, we have a home. If I do well, hopefully I can improve the life of others as well. And yeah, we need to acknowledge that we're part of a collective. And I think the most fulfilling thing you can do in life is actually work on something bigger than yourself. And that's what we should do together. So, I think an individualist, to some degree, yes, obviously we are individuals, but every individual is a part of a collective. So we must acknowledge that. And I just don't think we have been doing that in recent years. And this kind of lie of endless egalitarianism, and we're all equal, and there's no differences between us. It's just bullshit. Yeah, actually... every single nation in history, every single people in history discriminated and didn't look at the world as we're all equal, because we're not equal. And to say we're all equal, I would say, is immoral and just factually not true. So we need to acknowledge our differences. And just because you're weak in a certain category doesn't mean you can't be strong in another. So it's just something of accepting biological realities, accepting the truth, and going from there instead of just lying to ourselves and living in a false world where we are getting ruled by the weakest, it seems.
Right. Yeah. We must aim high and vote low. Okay, with that said, we're getting towards the end of our time. We've got together this morning. But so if you let people know perhaps where they can find you and follow you and all that sort of thing before I wrap it up with you.
Absolutely. Well, you can find me on TikTok if I'm not banned soon. TikTok's very woke. I'm on Angloid. My name's Angloid on literally all social medias: TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Started my YouTube. Obviously, just got my webcam and my mic. I hope it sounds somewhat all right. Still pretty cheap. Yeah, Angloid on almost all social media sites. I'm starting up my Substack soon. I'll be writing a lot more. Be doing a lot more stuff on YouTube, long form content. But yeah, TikTok and Instagram, more kind of meme stuff. Obviously, the younger generation's attention span is pretty cooked, so you've got to do something quick and quite funny. But Twitter. So yeah, Jangloid on all social media sites. It should come up.
Okay, great stuff. Thank you very
Absolutely.
much for your time. Maybe we'll have you on again at some point. And best of luck. Enjoy the day ahead.
Thank you very much. You too. It's been pretty good. Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers. Cheers, buddy.
Thank you very much.
All right, Harry. There you go. All right, there you go. The young blood, the next generation coming up. The leaders of the future, perhaps. These guys, people like Charlie. They've met loads of young people in Restore. If Restore is successful and goes on to be a real force in British politics going forward, beyond Rupert himself, even, who knows? Hopefully. Guys like that might just be the future. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. We've got more guests on later in the week, at least one towards the end of the week, I believe. And we'll keep getting guests on. And there is still talk. Don't hold your breath exactly, but we have got plans. There are still talk at some point, just like a much broader amount of guests. Maybe at some point, like Lotus Eaters Gold Tier members or the odd person here or there that's sort of vetted and trusted not to say something completely insane on a live stream can get on. You don't necessarily have to be someone that's like, got a big social media following or anything in the future. Like just a normal one of the Glorious Band, The Chosen Few, get a quick minute on, ask me a quick question or two, some point like that, maybe something like that in the future. It won't be for weeks and weeks yet, that, but might be done through Discord. We'll see. There's plans or something like that. All right. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. Very interesting young man, very based. Love it. All right. It is now just gone 10:02. So, should we have a quick look at this day in history and then start wrapping the show up? Rumble Rants and Super Chats. I like doing this bit. Down through the centuries, on this day, what happened of note? April the 21st. On this day in the year 753 BC. You know, before I've said in history, there's certain years. Really, really important years. And you can hang lots of other stuff around those years. 1453, 1588, 1066, 1914, 1945. 753 BC is one of those years, particularly if you're interested in ancient history, because it's the year, according to myth, according to legend, it's not firm history, really, but on that year, allegedly, Romulus and Remus found Rome. There you go. They found Rome. Do you think, Harry, do you reckon that your history bro, me, has got long form content talking about Romulus and Remus? Talking about Plutarch's account of Romulus and Remus. What's the betting I have got that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's there. Behind the paywall. Lotusleaders.com, so that's £5 a month. Consider signing up. Epochs, my history show. Couple of hours, me talking about Romulus and Remus. It's more myth than history, but there you go. You can pin loads of things around the year 753 BC. Did something or other happen before or after that in the ancient world? One to remember. Okay, on this day in 1526, the first battle of Panipat, where the Central Asian conqueror Babur defeats Sultan Ibrahim Lodi, establishing the Mughal Empire in India. Now, though I don't know about that in fantastic detail, I do know a fair bit about the end of the Mughal Empire. Mughal Muslims conquered vast swathes of what is modern-day Pakistan and India. Who put an end to all that? The oppression of Muslims over Indians? Yeah, the Taj Mahal is a Muslim thing, isn't it? Muslims conquered big chunks of India and oppressed the native Indians. The Brits put an end to that. Sir Arthur Wellesley, sorry, the Lord Wellington, first Duke Wellington, put an end to all of that. You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, on this day in 1792, Brazilian revolutionary Tiradentes, don't know if I'm pronouncing that properly, is hanged, drawn and quartered in Rio de Janeiro. That's really the part of the story. Again, don't know about it in fantastic details, but know a little bit about it. Is Brazil's struggle to become truly and fully independent of Portugal. He was one of those early martyrs, if you can call him that, because they killed him, of course. On this day in 1863, how am I even going to pronounce this? Baha'u'llah, founder of the Baha'i faith, enters the garden of Ridvan near Baghdad and declares himself a messenger of God during the 12 days he spends there. So again, that's a chap who's an Iranian, really. I mean, Iraq is a post-World War I thing. Before that, it was just Mesopotamia, really. It was owned by the Ottomans, controlled by the Ottomans, all through the 19th century, or long before, certainly during the 19th century. The bit of land that we now call Iraq was controlled by the Ottomans from Constantinople, Istanbul. Okay, and that chap there was like Persian, basically. Again, Iran didn't exist at that point. It was just Persia. He had his own faith. Anyway, quite an interesting thing if you're interested in that part of the world and that in the 19th century. On this day, in 1918, German World War I fighter ace Baron Manfred von Richthofen, a.k.a. the Red Baron, is shot down and killed over Vaux-sur-Somme in France. Canadian pilot Arthur Roy Brown is credited with the kill. Harry? Do you reckon I talk about the history of aviation, early aviation and World War I era aviation and a little bit about the Red Baron? I've got some content talking about that. Oh, yeah. Oh, what, in conversation with an actual Top Gun, an actual fast jet pilot, a modern-day RAF fast jet pilot about World War I era. Yeah. It's there. £5 a month. Yeah. Yeah, the Baron. He's a fascinating guy. Fascinating guy. Manfred von Richthofen. He said, one of the great things I love about him is he had so many kills, confirmed kills. Dozens and dozens and dozens. Usually he was expected to die quite quickly. And you might win a few dogfights, but eventually just get shot down. One time a German general, said to him, because he was very famous in his own lifetime, although, as you can see, they didn't survive the end of the war. In his own lifetime, an ace of aces, a general said to him, how have you done it? How do you manage to win every time? Because, of course, you only lose once and you're dead. How do you win every single time? What's your secret? Tell me your secret, because I want to recreate that myself in my own tactics and strategy. And Richthofen said to him, I'll tell you, but you won't like the answer. And the general was like, no, tell me your secret. He said, okay. Whenever I think I'm not going to win, I just run away. I just book out of there. I just fly away as fast as I can. If I'm outnumbered or the odds don't look like they're any good for me, I just flee the scene. That's how I'm still alive. And of course, the army general didn't like that. So that doesn't help him, does it? He can't do that. He's in engaged in trench warfare, static warfare. So he can't do that. That's the one thing he can't do, just run away. And the general was sort of aghast and annoyed and frustrated. But that's what the Baron did, the Red Baron. It's fair enough, really, isn't it? That's why I say, if you ever find yourself in any sort of street situation and you're outnumbered, or he's got a knife and you haven't, just run away. The idea that you're going to disarm someone with a knife, why do that? Just run away. If you've got a gun, okay, something different. Never bring a knife to a gunfight, but yeah. There's like three dudes there. You're not a coward for running away. You're on your own and there's three or four of them. You're not obliged to fight them, ever, I don't think. Same with a knife. A lot of martial arts people on YouTube or whatever, they say, don't try and take someone on with your fists if they've got a knife. Even if you're bigger and stronger and you know jiu-jitsu or whatever. No. Just run away. Run away. There's nothing cowardly about that. Be insane to do anything else, really. Okay, that's what the Red Baron would say as well. All right, on this day in 1989, thousands of Chinese citizens crowd into Beijing's Tiananmen Square, cheering for students demanding greater political freedom. But what this website here on this day in history, which has obviously got a left-leaning bias, not a particularly strong one, but it's certainly there, isn't it? What they haven't decided to put in that blurb is that the Chinese Communist Party put them down with extreme prejudice. There's the famous image, isn't there, of that guy, that one Chinese dissident with a carrier bag on his own, standing in front of a tank. The tank tries to sort of go round him. In the end, I think, just goes over him. They don't usually show you, or ever really show you that bit of it. But I think that guy is dead. Well, he is. Yeah, Chinese students in 1989... Chinese students wanted sort of greater political freedom, and the CCP said, no deal, and we'll kill a load of you and put a load of you in prison if you keep going, which they did. So, Tiananmen Square. If I speak to a Chinese person, some of them will talk about it. Others will say, the whole thing's like a Western propaganda thing. It's not real. Nothing really went down there. It wasn't a big deal, but... The Chinese Communist Party is an enemy of humanity, in my opinion. Absolutely disgusting. One of the, perhaps, if not the most dangerous cabal in the world. The Chinese Communist Party, absolute filth. All right, let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. What have we got here today? It's just gone nine, so let's have a look at these. The Rumble Rants. Oh, Global Church History isn't in at number one today. In fact, he's not there at all. He's had a day off. He's had a day off. Well earned. Well earned, sir. So, it's not Global Church History. We've got Johnny Logo says, how did Keir Starmer do well lawyer? How did Keir Starmer do well lawyer when he is such a bad liar? Or do well as, as a lawyer when he's such a bad liar? Yeah, well, he wasn't good as a lawyer. I mean, I suppose technically he was good, but he was always a traitor. He always did things, took on jobs and made arguments for things that undermined us. He's a full lefty. He was so, as a young man, he was so far left that the Fabian Society didn't want him. You can do well in the sphere of law with that sort of worldview in certain ways. But yeah, he's a bad liar, isn't he? Not a great liar. He's like a robot man. He's weird. He's a weird person. Okay, for T and Barber, morning, sir. You said, morning, all right. Seeing the Prime Minister be all sad yesterday, I felt terrible. Maybe a general election would cheer me up. There was a terrible accident at the Argentina rally on the weekend too. Oh, was there? Yeah, somebody did send me, one of my friends, IRL, did send me a link to something. I didn't read it, I only glanced at it. There was some sort of rally crash as well, was there? I don't know the details of it, if anyone died or whatever, but the one still image I saw looked a bit gnarly. But yeah, a general election would be nice, wouldn't it? I don't think Labour, like Starmer or whoever takes over from him, I doubt they'll call a general election because they know they will lose it. So you never, usually, the axiom is, you never just give power up for the sake of it if you're not forced to. If you're not painted into a corner to give power up, you just don't. You know, you only would call a general election beforehand, before you have to, if you think you would do better, if you get a bigger majority by doing that. And Labour simply won't, right? That's off the cards for them, you would have thought. So they won't do that. But it would be nice, wouldn't it? That'd be nice. Don't see it happening, I'm afraid. Okay, that's a random name, says, most immigrants and minorities have a massive inferiority complex, brackets rightly so, towards the host nations. That is why they seek to subvert and destroy everything we hold dear. Get them out. Yeah, they ain't us, so they hate us. Yeah, it is a type of resentment, a racial, historical resentment. A chip on their shoulder. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with it. Yuck. Get off of me. Get away from me. It's revolting. Yeah. Someone like Zara Sultana. Ugh. If you hate it here so much, go back to the home of your ancestors. The land of your forefathers, if it's so bad here. How about that? Revolting. Get off my island. Right. That's a random name. Also, if you can, tell the Restore guys that when interviews... Tell the Restore guys that when interviewers are trying to obfuscate the conversation about remigration, I don't care is not a good enough rebuttal. Okay. And that's one of two. I guess the second one is where you've said, instead they should ask them directly why they are obsessed with defending murderers, rapists and paedophiles. Ask them why they want our children abused. Yeah, good, yeah. Yeah, refuse to accept their framing. That there's anything wrong with wanting to remigrate millions of people that are here and shouldn't be here, have massively antithetical views, an intergenerational and ethnic chip on their shoulder, mean to replace us, make us a hated and marginalised minority in our own ancestral homeland. Yeah, why accept the framing that we're in the wrong? To have noticed and have a problem with that. Yeah, flip it back on them. Why do you want our women to be in danger? Not just the women. Yeah, why are you defending murderers, rapists and paedophiles? Yeah. Good, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And then one last one from That's a Random Name says, so that means I'm barred from coming on, or is spice on the menu? Winking emoji. I don't know, you're not barred from coming. I don't know. Are you... I don't know if you're... I'm sorry, that's a random name. Is that... Have you got a... sort of a big challenge with your name and face out there? Cole usually insists... Well, sort of does insist. You've got your real name and face at the very least. Be good to have a large social... I'm sorry, that's a random name. I know you're a very good, big fan of the website and everything, but... Well, we can see. Even when we get that thing up and running, like I mentioned before, the Discord thing, where, you know, super fans of the website and the channel and this show might be able to come on and have a few words. You'll definitely be, sort of, certainly would be involved in that, interested in that, I would have thought. Okay. What have we got here? And the last Rumble rant for this morning is from JC Warlock, and you say, did you look up Fort George or The Knowing, lol? Cool face. I didn't, I'm afraid. I didn't. I was very busy all day yesterday after the show, pretty much. The Knowing. I will check it out, though. The Fort George thing. If I can remember, I'll check it out. Quite often, as soon as I get off this show, I've got to move straight onto something else. Like, for example, this morning, pretty much straight after this, I've got to have a... quickly pop to the toilet, make another cup of tea probably, and then go straight into the other studio and record an Epochs. So, and then it will be lunchtime, And then I'll come back after lunch and I will probably have forgotten. But if I can remember, I will have a look. I'll try and look it up. All right. Now the YouTube super chats. Well, there's only a few here this morning. Sex Twister. That's their name. Sex Twister says, good morning, Baldy. Morning. I just declared a ceasefire. Let's party. Fair enough. There's a few people on Twitter that just, an affectionate thing, call me Baldy. Like, what, Baldy? When you've completely come to terms with it. Erwin Romulus. I met you at the live show, didn't I? Great name. Great name there. Erwin Romulus. Says, wonderful to have a smooth feed without the audio gremlins. Well played, young Harry. Yeah, that one went fine, didn't it? So hopefully everything will be fine going forward now. There's a number of gremlins before, weren't there? But it seems like that was sort of perfectly smooth, wasn't it? Absolutely no issues whatsoever. So hopefully going forward now. Yeah. Yeah, well done, Harry and Samson, for sorting it out. The sort of head producer, Samson. Well done for all that. Good stuff. F Google 2. It's not F. They've put the full thing. F Google 2 says, everyone knows Rome was founded by LGBT Vikings. Yeah, sorry. No, quite right. Yeah. That's the real history. All right. And the last super chat today. From Mr. Dickie Bingo. How are you this morning, sir? Pleasure to meet you at the last weekend. You say, great to hear kids 40 years younger than me thinking the same patriotic things. Yeah. It's lovely, isn't it? Hopefully Angloid is the end result of decades of social engineering. Right. Despite everything they've tried since the 60s, really. Despite all of it. You end up with a 19-year-old kid like that. He was like, nah, no thank you, I'm going to be patriotic and nativist, thank you very much. No, I've got an in-group preference and it's for my own people, what now? Brilliant. Let's hope he and his generation and the country at large, there's more of those than there are insane green freakazoid champagne socialist weirdo Islamophiles. Let's hope. I think there are. I think the silent majority that have just not voted for the last 10, 15 years are almost entirely of his ilk. I think so. I hope so. We shall see. All right. That is the last super chat. That's the show. It's now 12 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime on Tuesday, the 21st of April in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for watching. Without you, it isn't a thing. You have been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Try and make the best of the day ahead if you can. Carpe diem. You'll never have this day again. The number of days you've got on this earth are finite. Try and make it count if you can. All right then, until tomorrow morning. Take care.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.